So this morning, in as part of the message, I'm going to be referring to the UU principles, which you might find it handy to. They're in the gray hymnal, which I don't know if I have a copy up here. It looks like this. The gray hymnal, number 594, the reading at the end, 594. There'll be an opportunity for you to refer to those, so if you want to take a moment and find 594, that'll make that piece part of the message go a little smoother. This time of year in the Christian tradition is Advent, which is the title I chose for the today's service. But in saying that Advent is the start of something new, right? And so I think it was a fitting theme, not only for this time of year within the Christian tradition, but also for where we are as a church. So we find ourselves at an interesting juncture. We have a really long and distinguished history. And I'll say that I'll quote a few times from a book that was written in 1900 on the occasion of the 75th anniversary of our church. It was fascinating reading. I spent way too much time reading that, not enough preparing this, so I'm sorry. But it's about 100 pages. If you want a copy, I have a PDF of it. It's public domain, so I can share that. But it's an interesting. This church was a really meaningful part of Meadville's history. So, and I hope that'll be apparent in my comments today. And it's easy to forget just what a history we have here. Our church was formed in 1825, and for context, that's the same year that the American Unitarian Association was formed in Massachusetts. The Unitarian Association would later merge with the Universalist Church of America. That was 1961 to create the UUA. But UU Meadville, or the Independent Congregational Church of Meadville, which is what the church was called until, I think, 1961, began as a Unitarian church. So in his address, which became a monograph, Earl Morse Wilbur gave a little bit of context to what things were like, and I'm going to quote fairly extensively here from that. So I quote, "The completion of the turnpike between Philadelphia and Erie in 1824 and the Erie Canal in October of 1825 seemed to bring this part of the country, referring to Crawford County, into very close connection with the East. It was boasted that a gentleman had traveled to Troy from Erie in only 79 hours, and that a merchant had arrived at Meadville from New York in the unprecedented time of 5.5 days. While the time to Philadelphia had been reduced to only 6 days. At the beginning of 1825, Meadville possessed 10 stores, 10 taverns, 4 mills, a college already 10 years old, and one Presbyterian church that had been founded in 1800. The Presbyterian church had dedicated its meeting house in 1820 on the lot on Liberty Street where the present church now stands. And this remained the only place for public worship until 1825, when the Methodists, who had organized earlier in that year, fitted up a room for meetings over John Luford's blacksmith shop at the southeast corner of South Main and Arch. The Lutherans had formed a church in 1815, but it ceased to exist soon after. An Episcopal church was organized January 25, 1825 as well, but its church building was not dedicated until 3 years later. Like the Methodists and Episcopalians, the Unitarians organized in 1825, and the first preacher of Unitarianism here was John Mudge Merrick, a young man who was a tutor in Mr. Hyde Cooper's family from October 1825 to October 1827. It's assumed that the first Unitarian service in town was held either October or November of 1825, and it was held in the Presbyterian Church on Liberty Street. And the reason it met there, this was interesting, this was in the book, but I've stopped quoting here, but the The Presbyterian Church, when it was built, in order to get it built, they had lots of people to subscribe, and they had to include then to make that, get people to pay, that when they weren't using it for Presbyterian services, it had to be open for any religious service that wanted to be held at that time. So a number of other faiths could meet there. So that made the rest of this little bit here. Mr. Merritt generally, I'm quoting again now, Mr. Merritt generally preached fortnightly, sometimes upstairs in the old log courthouse, standing at the northwest corner of Public Square and Cherry Alley, sometimes in the new courthouse. I have no idea what that building was, but usually in the Presbyterian Church on Liberty Street at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There was no organ, even in the church, and the services must have been exceedingly simple. But letters written at the time show that there was no lack of warm fervor and lively interest. Sunday evenings, the little flock used to gather at Pomona Hall, which was the home of the Hyde Coopers, and sing hymns together under Mr. Merrick's leadership. The Meadville Unitarian Church, thus established, was the first Unitarian church west of the Alleghenies that has maintained an unbroken existence down to the present day, and one of the first in the country to be, from its very foundation, avowedly Unitarian, end quote. So a little more context. The building we are now in was completed in 1836, and as near as I could determine, and I'm not a great at these things, and Amelia's here, and she'll correct me, I'm sure, after the service. This is the second oldest public building in, still standing in Crawford County, still in use in Crawford County, second only to Bentley Hall on Allegheny's campus. And if I'm interpreting the materials that I found correctly, at the time of the sanctuary's dedication, 1836 or thereabout, approximately 20% of Meadville's population were members of the church, including a large proportion of the professional and business class. The church's original charter was very short, and it was drafted in 1829, and it states, "Everyone who believes in the existence of one God and in the divine mission of Jesus of Nazareth as the Christ, the Son of God, is admissible as a member of this church. No other faith, no other profession of faith than that contained in this simple creed shall at any time be imposed as a condition of church membership. Every person possesses the inalienable right of judging for himself in matters of religion, and no one has the right to call another to account for any religious opinions which he may hold." I'll note it's a little gendered there, because I guess that was 1829, so. And that it still includes references to a Christian tradition, which is no longer part of our tradition. Or we've broadened. I mean, I shouldn't say it's not part of it. We've broadened to embrace a number of different areas. But even at that time, this was a really stark departure from the Calvinist doctrines that tended to dominate religious thought in this area. Calvinism and most other similar religious traditions at the time asserted the church's right to dictate what was proper belief in theology and to dismiss as heretics those who would not confess faith in the terms the church dictated. Although the sole focus on the Christian tradition has dropped from our UU tenets, it's now embraced as one of many sources. The latter assertion, declaring the right of each person to chart their own spiritual journey without hindrance or condemnation, has remained central to our UU principles. Throughout the 19th century and the first half of the 20th century, churches were dominant features of American culture. In fact, to be kicked out of your church actually could impact you professionally and socially, right? Because that was part of where social standing came from. After race, gender, family of origin, and profession, one's social life and status were defined by the church or the temple to which one belonged. The other churches in the 19th century were not others, those other than the Unitarians, and I believe the Universalists, were not amenable to free thinkers. As Mr. Wilbur observed again in his 1900 address, in its religious tendencies, this part of the state was markedly conservative, as it remains, relatively speaking, even to this day. I think that's still true. The predominant element among the early settlers was of Scottish-Irish origin, strong in its allegiance to the faith of Calvin and of Knox, end quote. I can only surmise that the independent Congregational Church of Meadville was a welcome home to those with more liberal religious views throughout the first century and a half of our church's existence. Conversations with longtime members when I first joined UU-Meadville 1988 attest to its impact. By all accounts, our church was the center of social life for its members into the early 1970s. 659ers, which many of you will know of, 659ers, which were elaborate dinners, usually held at least once a month, were much welcomed and enjoyed. Several longtime members affirmed that the UU Church Women's Group, perhaps the true power of within the church, judging by many comments I've heard, met almost daily during the church year in the 50s and 60s to work on crafts for the annual UU Christmas Bazaar or other projects, participate in study groups, and pursue other activities. Children who were too young or otherwise not in school accompanied the women to church for these activities, fostering friendships among the youth and securing the church as central to social life. According to Carl Heeshan, a former church member and Allegheny art professor who designed the addition to the parish house that was completed in the middle of the last century, at the time the addition was built, the youth group was large and active enough that they were holding their own youth services in the parish house concurrent with the adult services in the sanctuary. The Arthur Room was designed specifically as a children's chapel, that's what Carl called it, a site for these services, which is why there's a stage at one end and a large painting depicting various religious traditions on the back wall behind the stage. And I think the recent bequest we received from Jill LeSueur York attests to the impact of the church at that time. She was only here for, I think, my understanding, she lived in Meadville for 4 years when she was in high school, and she attended our church and was active in the youth group. And that must have made some kind of an impact if she, now 60 years later, left a substantial bequest to the church. But considering where we are, if we look at where we are now, we see that things have changed. As I mentioned when I spoke a few weeks ago, 50 years ago, at least 3/4 of the United States population belonged to a church, a synagogue, or a mosque, and that church was often central to their identity. Now, fewer than 1/2 of Americans belong to a religious organization, and demographic projections suggest that church membership or membership in other religious organizations will drop to less than 1/3 of the population within the coming decades. It is exceedingly unlikely that we can recreate a vibrant church of 200 members using the model that sustained us through the first two centuries of our existence, since the number of people seeking such an experience is rapidly declining, as is, well, it's not rapid, but there's a slow decline in the population of our county as well. We can continue, as we have been, with this historical model. That's absolutely a choice. While accepting that our congregation is unlikely to grow, and accepting as well the reality that the endowment and facilities we inherited, although significant, are not sufficient to sustain us indefinitely. It is likely, though, that we have enough resources to muddle along for the rest of the lives of most of us gathered here today, but continuing slow decline would be almost certain. So if we choose this path, it would be a service to those who have supported us in the past, and a kindness to those that follow to establish some process for the eventual dissolution of the church and a responsible disposition of its remaining assets when the appropriate time comes. And I want to be clear, this is a reasonable course of action, right? There are organizations that choose this as a course of action. Everything has its time, right? And we have to decide, you know, what is our time as a church, right? Each person, each organization, all things have their time. But this is not our only choice in this moment. There are alternatives, and we could choose a different path. Although churches and other religious institutions have lost the role they had in American life for much of the last 200 years, and Americans are no longer seeking a religion or a religious organization, at least, they are increasingly seeking a spiritual path. Our UU principles could inform and sustain this search. Indeed, broader acceptance of such principles will be needed to support spiritual seekers if they are to be successful and unimpeded in their quest. And our community needs the healing that wider understanding, acceptance, and practice of principles like those that the UU Church would bring. So this is where I want to take a moment and reflect on those UU principles. So if you have your hymnal there, I'd like you to just read through on your own, read through 594, Principles and Purposes for All of Us, which are the UU principles. And just note those that particularly speak to you. So what I'd like us to do now, and with apologies to anyone who might listen to this recording later, I would like us to read these not responsively, which is how they were designed, but what's sometimes called popcorn style. And the way this works is I'm going to read the first line about the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and then someone of you who feels this particularly speaks to you will speak the second line about believing in every person is important, and then someone else will pick up the next line. And so what this calls us to do, this isn't always an interesting exercise, because what it calls us to do as individuals is to do two things. One is to really feel like, which of these lines are lines that I particularly identify with or that are meaningful to me and that I would like to call out into this gathering, right? It also calls us to be attentive to what I sometimes refer to, or some of us refer to, as the energy in the room. Like, who's needed now to speak these words? Am I that person? Right? So I'd like us to do this and leave just, a second a couple seconds between each line, so we have a moment to let those register, but to really attend to the meaning of the words and to what's needed from us in order for us to do this reading. So, Principles and Purposes for All of Us. We affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person.
We believe that each and every person is important.
We affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. We believe that all people should be treated fairly.
Thank you. These are really powerful statements. They affirm that each one of us, you, your friends, even those with whom you disagree, each one is worthy of respect, of compassion, and caring. You matter, your friends matter, all of us matter. They affirm that supporting ourselves and others in spiritual growth, even if their path is different from our own, is important and sacred work. They affirm that each of us must be true to our own inner voice, the voice of God within. They affirm that fostering peaceful and mutually respectful relations within our community and world is a task worth doing. They affirm that all of God's creation is sacred. All of it deserves our care. So what the board proposes and you will be asked to consider in today's congregational meeting is a new path for our church. It's one that doesn't seek to grow the membership. It doesn't seek to tend primarily to those already within our circle, but rather it seeks to dissolve the boundaries between us and them, to stop the sense of othering, right? There are us and them, and really think about ourselves as a community. Seek partners outside our membership who can help us bring healing to our community through spiritual growth aligned with our UU principles. In the proposal, we characterize this work as helping ourselves and the members of our community nurture their relationships with the sacred within themselves, within each other, and within the natural world. To me, when I read those words, nurturing our relationships with the sacred, that is recognizing and honoring the divine within ourselves, within others, within nature, is the very essence of worship. Our proposal suggests then that we will practice our principles, that is, we will worship together, not just on Sundays, but throughout the week. I trust there will continue to be meaningful and enlivening worship services each Sunday if we choose to go this direction, and I hope there will be equally meaningful and enlivening opportunities to recognize and honor the divine within us, those around us, and in the world, that is, to worship throughout the week. This talk about worship is not how some of us, perhaps even most of us, are accustomed to thinking about our lives as UUs, but it runs deep in our traditions. One need only reflect on the readings in the back of our hymnal to see this. And I'll close today's message with a reading adapted from, with some words adapted from one of those readings. To worship. A reading adapted from the writings of Jacob Trapp. To worship is to stand in awe under a heaven of stars, before a flower, before a leaf in sunlight, or before a grain of sand. To worship is to be silent and receptive before a tree astir with the wind or the passing shadow of a cloud. To worship is to work with dedication and with skill. It is to pause from work and listen to a strain of music. To worship is to sing with the singing beauty of the earth. It is to listen through a storm to the still small voice within. Worship is loneliness seeking communion. It is a thirsty land crying out for rain. Worship is listening deeply to our neighbor, calling forth the light that lies within. Worship is kindred fire within our hearts. It moves through deeds of kindness and through acts of love. Worship is the mystery within us, reaching out to the mystery beyond. Worship is an inarticulate silence yearning to speak. It is the window of this moment open to the sky of the eternal. Blessed be and amen.